Hi, I'm Susanna Hewson from HSF's Head Office Advisory Team, and welcome to Reporting for Duties. Reporting for Duties is our limited podcast series aiming to provide bite-sized insights on corporate reporting and ESG. In this episode, we have Tim Stutt and Anna Cronio reporting for duty. And our topic for discussion is what happens now that the Australian government has introduced the climate-related legislation into Parliament. Before we get into it, though, I would first like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from which we are broadcasting today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders both past and present. So, Tim, the legislation has been introduced to Parliament. What can we expect?
Well, I think we can expect a little bit. Certainly, there has been a lot of press coverage in relation to ASIC Chair Joe Longo's comments that this is a once-in-a-generation step forward for corporate reporting, and there will be a pretty meaningful shift in our view as a result of the climate reporting regime. Obviously, it's in Parliament at the moment, but we do expect it to proceed through Parliament and be enacted. Importantly, while it will be a really significant step change in terms of reporting itself, and we'll talk a little bit about that in this episode and in subsequent editions of Reporting for Duties, as well as the reporting itself, it's part of a broader plan by the government to introduce a sustainable finance strategy. So the government has consulted on a proposed sustainable finance strategy for Australia, and climate reporting was one of the enablers for that strategy. And the reason for that was actually access to climate-related information and an understanding of climate-related impacts, risks, and opportunities is quite key for deeper and broader pools of capital being invested around sustainable themes. Actually, from a market integrity standpoint, and to facilitate those the sustainable finance market broadly, the climate reporting regime will be quite important. Not the only enabler, and you'll see the sustainable finance strategy picks up other things such as product labeling, taxonomies, so on and so forth, but it is one of the key ones. And the reason for that is really that the climate reporting regime is intended to improve the quality of information which companies are reporting in relation to climate-related risks and opportunities, but also improve the consistency of information. So there is enhanced comparability across the market. And across the market, across sectors, and also you know, even within sectors, actually comparability has been a problem, the new regime will be intended to help improve that as well. When it comes to the level of reporting required, I think there is a fair amount of angst in the market as to how much work it's going to involve and how to get up the curve and be ready to report when the regime comes into effect. There have also been some comments that it shouldn't be a compliance exercise, and actually it shouldn't impose an onerous compliance burden. I think with respect to some of those comments, a lot will be required in terms of uplift to be ready for the reporting. And at times it may be that it feels like a significant compliance burden. Ultimately, though, I do think the transparency around the impacts, risks, and opportunities of climate on businesses will mean that there will be meaningful investment in the reporting, and also that it will be meaningful in terms of the transparency and reporting progress, and it will enhance the quality of information to the market. So, I while I think some people are very concerned about the compliance burden at the moment, I do think longer term it will be one of those sort of inflection points.
And Anna, could you talk us through who will be required to report under this regime?
So picking up on what Tim was just saying about the work that's involved to comply, helpfully, the start date has moved from 1 July 2024 to 1 January 2025 for some of the companies that are required to report. In terms of figuring out who's required to report and then also when you need to report, the first step is to look at the company's size, and there's a couple of criteria that will apply to this. We helpfully have an article that we released on the 27th of March 2024, which has a bit of a diagram that I think summarises this quite well, but I'll do my best to play that out now. So Group 1 entities will be the ones which are the first to report. There are some criteria that apply to them. The first lot of criteria applies to entities and their controlled entities who meet at least two of the following criteria. So consolidated revenue at least 500 million, consolidated gross assets at the end of financial year at least 1 billion, and consolidated group employees at the end of the financial year at least 500. So if you meet at least two of those criteria, you'll fall into group one. In addition, if you are an entity that meets the threshold under the National Greenhouse and Energy Reporting regime, then you will also be captured in group one. Secondly, we have group two, and they'll have to report a little bit later, and I'll come to the dates shortly. But group two have sort of a similar approach where you need to satisfy at least two of the criteria relating to revenue, gross assets, and employees to be captured. So for consolidated revenue, it would be at least 200 million. For consolidated gross assets, it's at least 500 million. And for end of financial year employees for the consolidated group, it's at least 250 employees. And then it's also, even if you're not captured by that, but you are subject to the National Greenhouse and Energy Reporting, then you also fall into that group too if you weren't already in group one. And the other group that would be captured are entities with 5 billion assets under management or more. So they would also fall under group two. Then there's group three, which is sort of everyone else, all the other companies that are captured by this. Similarly, they've got the at least two of three criteria. So those thresholds are 50 million or more, 25 million or more, and 100 employees or more. So if you tick two of those and haven't fallen into group one or two, then you would be captured under group three. In terms of what it actually means for when you need to start reporting, it's actually a little bit complex because of the way that it's been drafted. So I'll do my best to make it simple. It all actually hinges on when the legislation is passed. If we get the legislation passed and it receives royal assent on or before 2 December, then it'll commence as we're anticipating it will. And so what happens is companies in Group 1 that have a financial year that starts between 1 January 2025 and 30 June 2026, they will form the Group 1 entities and they need to report during that time. So what that means is if you have a company that has a financial year that starts on 1 January 2025, that will be its first reporting period. A company in Group 1 that has its financial year starting on 1 July 2025 will also have that as its first reporting period. For Group 2 entities, it depends on when their first financial year commences in the bracket 1 July 2026 to 30 June 2027. So a Group 2 company that has a financial year starting on 1 July 2026, that'll be the first financial year that they have to report on. If, however, they had a financial year that started a month earlier, they would get pushed out and they'd have to report in the next financial year. The Group 3 entities have a bit longer, and it'll depend on which financial year they've got that starts between 1 July 2027 and 30 June 2028. Those dates that I've just mentioned are the start of the financial year, so the actual report wouldn't be until the end of the financial year, and it'll be similar to the usual financial reporting timeframes in terms of the deadline for actually releasing that report. Needless to say, it's a little bit complex.
But it's also simple in the sense of for those who are Group 1 entities and caught in that first phase, if they have a calendar year, their first report is probably going to be the 2025 report that they do, and they'll be releasing it in 2026, so sort of February-ish 2026. And for those that have a standard Australian financial year, they would be looking at doing their reporting for FY25/26 year and releasing that around August 2026.
That's right, Tim. The other point to note is even if you don't fall within Group 1, 2 or 3 at the relevant time, there is an element of needing information from other companies because we've got Scope 3 emissions reporting and companies have also adopted climate commitments that might need information or impose obligations on other companies as well. So even if you are not in those groups or are not yet technically required to report, you might still be asked to provide information to assist with the reporting of Group 1 entities in particular.
So I think if we think about bite-sized insights, it's that this climate-related financial reporting will have a meaningful impact on corporate reporting practices across the nation and will provide a cornerstone of the climate and sustainability-related strategy more broadly. And there's quite some nuance in the ways in which and when your company could be caught. So it's worth getting your head around now. Thanks for joining us. This was Tim Stutt, Anna Cronio and Susanna Hewson reporting for Duty.
You have been listening to a podcast brought to you by Herbert Smith Freehills. For more episodes, please go to our channel on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, and visit our website, herbertsmithfreehills.com, for more insights relevant to your business.